Hey, this is Todd Stacy, and welcome to In the Weeds with Alabama Daily News. Today's episode features Congressman Robert Adderholt of Haleyville. Mr. Adderholt represents Alabama's 4th Congressional District, and he was first elected in 1996. That makes him the dean of Alabama's House delegation, and he has used those 22 years in office to build really valuable seniority, particularly on the Appropriations Committee. In Congress, members kind of specialize in different roles. Some are hill climbers who take each step trying to climb the ladder in leadership, whether it's the whip or the majority leader or the Speaker of the House. Some are bomb throwers, the kind that you see on TV all the time, taking shots at the other side and trying to win the political game day to day. There are also lawmakers who grind it out amid the various authorizing committees like Judiciary, Labor, Energy and Commerce, and Ways and Means, attempting to actually make and amend law piece by piece. Then there are the appropriators, who spend each year crafting the 12 different spending bills that fund our government. Congressman Adderholt is an appropriator, and he has been one since his first day in Congress. That's pretty rare, because it usually takes someone several terms to earn a spot on the Appropriations Committee. These can be very sought-after positions. After all, it's Congress's main responsibility to fund the federal government. And if you're one of these select few that gets to draw up the spending plans, well, that can win you a lot of friends and influence. I asked Mr. Adderholt about his time on appropriations and how he goes about determining his priorities. You'll hear him talk about earmarks and how that process has changed over time. And just to explain, earmarks are the term used to describe budget line items set aside by an individual lawmaker for an individual purpose. So if I'm the congressman from Montgomery and I want $20 million for a bridge, I could put it in the appropriations bill and that would be called an earmark. Only that's not the way it works anymore. Over the years, the system got abused and it led to instances of serious corruption. So when John Boehner became Speaker back in 2011, he banned the use of earmarking. But as you'll hear Mr. Adderholt say, there's a lot of talk about bringing some kind of reformed process back, because otherwise Congress is really just ceding control of the purse strings to the executive branch. And no matter whether there's a Republican or Democrat in the White House, members of Congress don't like ceding control to the executive branch. Other than appropriations, we talked about trade and tariffs, his relationship with President Trump. Mr. Adderholt has also been a longtime member of the Congressional Prayer Caucus, and he discussed his work with that bipartisan group in detail as well. So here's our conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Well, hey, Congressman. You've changed offices. I actually went to Cannon first.
Yep. Right, we've changed because they're doing a renovation building in the Cannon building, or renovation project, I should say. And so they are doing, it's probably going to be about a 8-year process, I would assume. They're doing it each side of the building and taking about a 2-year time period. And we happen to be, our office was in that side of the building that's being refurbished right now. And of course, the building was opened about 1906. And it has not really had any major renovations, I don't think, since 1906. It was the first House office building to be opened back before 1906. The members of Congress actually had desks on the House floor. And then they, in 1906, they set up having off meetings where they could have, I guess, people were coming to Washington more and wanting to meet with their congressmen. So it was a way to accommodate that. But after 100 plus years, it had needed a little bit of renovation. So they're going through a multi-year process to renovate the entire building.
It's the week of the prayer breakfast. I know you've been involved with that for some time. I wanted to ask you about that. How long have you been involved in it? And can you kind of explain your role?
Yeah, no, I have been very involved in the prayer breakfast since I was actually first elected. And a lot of people know about the yearly prayer breakfast. That is sort of the big event for the year. We have a weekly prayer breakfast that the House and the Senate both participate in on a weekly basis that we're in session. It is a place that the members come. It's not an event where we, you know, it's lack of a better word, it's not some kind of dog and pony show. It's just actually for members. It's just for members can share. We usually read scripture. We usually sing a song, and sometimes it may be off key, but we do actually sing a hymn or something together. And breakfast is served, and it's just we hear from one of the members, and they share a little bit about their journey. A lot about sometimes it's their political journey and how it maybe intersects with their spiritual journey through life. And so, but the great thing about the weekly prayer breakfast that makes it really different from any other event that's on Capitol Hill that's bipartisan. And it's purposely, it's Democrat and Republicans. One week the Republican will speak, the next week a Democrat will speak, and vice versa, and it goes back and forth. So it's not dominated by Republicans or not dominated by Democrats. It is truly a bipartisan where we don't really talk about issues. We don't really go in there to talking about an agenda. That's sort of the rule. When you come in there, you're just there as be friends with everyone. And it's really, I think, has really caused a spirit of unity among Democrats and Republicans that attend, because they're not there to defend their position and they're not there to be criticized if they have a different position. It's basically we come around scripture and what Jesus taught about trying to come together in reconciliation, and so that's what has made this prayer breakfast a success. And then, of course, we open it up to the public once a year for the National Prayer Breakfast, and we invite our really international friends. Members of Parliament from other parliaments around the world come in and join us for that prayer breakfast. And a lot of them are emulating what we're doing with our weekly prayer breakfast. They say, you know, this is a really good idea. I know y'all have bickering between Democrats and Republicans. You know, some of these countries in Europe have 5 or 6 or 10 parties. And so they'll try to gather together and come in a spirit of unity and around scripture as opposed to around some issue. And as you know, if you come try to gather some issue, always going people will be dividing and have differences of opinion. But when you talk about the things that Jesus had talked about, it, you know, about loving your neighbors yourself and loving God with all your heart, it's hard for people to say, you know, I don't agree with that. You know, I don't think we should love people. And there may be some people out there that would advocate that, but, you know, most people wouldn't say it. So that's really this yearly prayer breakfast that we have, which is this Thursday, is to really focus on our visitors from around the world and say, we want you to come join us for this prayer breakfast.
Well, there's a lot of discontent, you know, religious-wise, or, you know, there's a lot of division. People use, people justify very different positions on issues with their faith. So, I mean, especially lately, it seems like there's a lot more of just division over what morality is. So is that a good way to maybe bridge that gap? Like you said, you don't talk about issues, you're just talking about faith.
And that's the reason we talk about, we talk more of a things that Jesus talked about and about loving God and loving your neighbor. And that's what really we try to focus on. Not so much as, I think each person then has to go out and reflect, what am I to do with this? But as you know, when Jesus taught in Scripture, he was about changing people's hearts. He was not trying to run a political agenda. When he was here, and matter of fact, he was criticized because he wasn't, you know, doing some of the things. Some of the religious leaders thought he was supposed to do this and that, and, you know, the usher in the kingdom and all, but he was talking about changing people's hearts. And that's what those of us that are involved in the prayer breakfast, I had the honor a couple of years ago to be the co-chair for the National Prayer Breakfast, and I co-chaired it with one of my Democrat colleagues from California, who is probably as liberal as I am conservative. And but again,
did you introduce President Obama? Did I remember?
Yeah, that was the year that I think it was last year that President Obama was actually in his presidency. And but really, the president always speaks, but the president is really not the center of that breakfast. We like it because the president has been coming ever since Dwight Eisenhower back in the 50s, has been attending every year for this yearly prayer breakfast. But we have a speaker that comes to talk about more spiritual things. And the year that I chaired, I was glad to invite Roma Downey, who was, most people know the show Touched by an Angel, and her husband Mark Burnett, who actually, oddly enough, was the producer for The Apprentice, but also The Voice, I think Shark Tank, several big shows in Hollywood. He is the president of MGM. And so they came. They have always felt that spiritual things are important to them, and so they shared there at the national prayer breakfast a couple of years ago.
Well, thank you. Thank you for explaining all that. I'm sure listeners will really be interested. I wanted to talk about a few issues. Number one, trade, because that's been really topical lately. You've been involved in a lot of this. The orthodoxy of the Republican Party is kind of changing, or a little fluid on this. President Trump has brought a more aggressive, using tariffs as a stick and all this. But you've had your Buy American provisions in appropriations bills for as long as I can remember. So you have a record of...
Probably 6 years or more, yeah.
Okay. So how do we reconcile that? What's the future? What is the conservative Republican supposed to do with more aggressive tariffs? Are they working? What's the future there?
Well, first of all, let me say that when I came to Washington, the prevailing attitude was free trade, and if you were not 100% free trade, and then pretty much you were someone who was a protectionist. And I don't really see it that way, and I don't think the president sees it that way. I think there's a way to say, we've got to have fair trade, we've got to have free trade, we've got to make sure, though, that we have a level playing field. And a lot of the trade agreements that we have entered into, just so we could get a trade deal, we have really been penalized. And you just see some of the examples where we are under the WTO, World Trade Organization, we are not allowed to put any tariffs on other countries, but yet they can put tariffs on us. And it's just not a level playing field. And like I said, I'll be the first to say that trade is very important, that we need to make sure that we have strong trade with other countries. But I don't think we can do it at the detriment of where we have our hands tied. And I think that's what this president is trying to do. President Trump is trying to say, if we have the ability to put on tariffs, then we go to the negotiating table with a stronger hand and we can get a better deal for us, because we certainly want our products here in the United States that are made and are grown to be sent over to other countries, and so therefore it's has to be a two-way street as opposed to a one-way street.
Are we going to have to endure a little pain to get those deals? I mean, if the tariffs interrupt some auto or agriculture things in Alabama, is that worth it to get the ultimate?
I think we've got to be smart how we do it, and I think we've got to be very careful. But if you play it right, and if you come under the understanding that at the end of the day that we're going to have a more level playing field, because we have some of our manufacturing sector is just gone away. And I think this country has to have a certain amount of manufacturing. There are some people here in Washington, and of course other parts of the country, who believe that really we shouldn't really be manufacturing anything in the United States. And I don't think that's true. They think that, oh, we should go just buy from overseas. And I think that there is a role for manufacturing in this country. And certainly, when it comes to agriculture, I think that we need to make sure we have a strong agricultural segment here in this country. I don't think we need to have all of our food shipped in here. Now, obviously, when it comes to coffee and beans, we don't really are good at growing coffee beans here in the United States, or there may be parts of the country that, like Hawaii or somewhere, they can grow bananas or something. But that's a perfect thing that we can ship in from other countries, but a lot of those countries can't grow don't grow cotton, or they don't grow corn like we do. So I think the trade with our agricultural products are just as important as our manufacturing products.
Has trade been that issue, has that been a way for you to build your relationship with the president? It seems like you were with him when trade issues come up.
Yeah, no, he's been. I think we see eye to eye on this, and he is. And like a lot of Republican presidents that I have dealt with in the past, and especially not only presidents but people in leadership here in Washington, they have just sort of taken the attitude as that, you know, we just can't touch the trade issue. We're just trying to get a trade deal, and whatever we have to do to make a trade deal, that's going to be that's the way it is. This president's saying, no, we want to trade with you, but we want to make sure that we're in a good position as well. And so that's where I see this president really taking the leadership, and where I've said, you know, this really makes sense. And I've thought ever since I came to Washington that it made sense that you don't just get a trade deal just for the sake of getting a trade deal. You don't get it just for the say, oh, we've got a trade deal with this country, even though it's really one-sided. So it's refreshing to see somebody like the president in a leadership position who is wanting to actually go for a level playing field and trying to get make some changes to what has otherwise been something that we've just left to the other countries, and saying, you know, do anything you want to us, and just so we have a trade agreement.
How is your relationship with the president?
Well, it's good. I was in the Oval Office last week, and we were talking about this Buy American issue. And we really didn't talk about America. Let me just focus on Buy American just a little bit. The whole premise of Buy American is that you're using taxpayer dollars to put in infrastructure in this country. A lot of city, county governments are putting pipes down for water infrastructure. And what the whole premise of this idea of Buy American is that you would buy it from companies that produce pipe in the United States before you go out and buy it from another country. Now, obviously, you don't want a situation where they hijack the price, and it's, you know, but I think as long as there's healthy competition, we have many pipe manufacturers here in the United States. So you would never want one particular company to have a corner on the market where they get all the business, because what I'm afraid they would do would jack up the price and the taxpayers left holding the bill. But if you can do it in such a way where you have competition between American companies, and you can use the American taxpayer dollars to help make jobs, produce jobs here in the United States, I think it's a win-win situation.
I wanted to talk about CJS, Commerce, Justice, and Science.
Yep.
You're now a ranking member. I assume that would have been chairman had Republicans, I mean, I guess you can't say for absolute certain, but that would have been chairman,
right,
had Republicans gotten.
And, you know, of course, last 6 years I've chaired the Agricultural Subcommittee of Appropriations, and we have a rule in our Republican conference that after 6 years you move on to another subcommittee, or you give another member an opportunity to do that. So Congressman Fortenberry from Nebraska will be coming on and taking my place as the Republican on the Ag Committee, even though he'll be ranking now. But as we lost the majority, we all change hats now, and now we're the ranking member. And, you know, sort of when you say the ranking member, I think people, we use that very loosely here in Washington, D.C., but when you're outside the Beltway, you're like, what is a ranking member?
Right, yeah, and explain
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the ranking member is basically the top Republican or the top Democrat, whatever party's in the minority, top minority party. Mm-hmm. So whatever the most senior or the member of the opposite party is the ranking. They rank, I guess the term is, they rank above all the other members. And so therefore they are sort of like a vice chair, for lack of a better term. The chairman has the gavel, but it's sort of like a vice chairman. You're sort of the chairman for the Republicans, and then the other member is the chairman for the Democrats, but the Democrats have the gavel, and so that's why they get the title.
So how are you going to use that position? What will you do as ranking member on CJS? Because there's a lot of Alabama connections. I mean, there's Huntsville, there's, you know, commerce is everywhere, and including the coast. There's justice. How are you going to use that position?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. First of all, you hit on Huntsville with Marshall Space Flight Center. NASA is in the budget. We control the budget for NASA. It's called Commerce, Justice, Science because all the sciences are under that umbrella. National Science Foundation is under our jurisdiction, and of course NASA. And because Marshall Space Flight Center has a big presence in North Alabama, and because a lot of jobs there, I want to be, you know, I have been involved. I've only been on the subcommittee, but I've just not been in a leadership role on the subcommittee. So having that and trying to make sure that we secure jobs at Marshall and make sure that they're doing their job and they have plenty of work to do, I want to try to facilitate that. The other thing is Department of Justice. Of course, that's a big thing, especially with the FBI being under the Department of Justice. But also, working with Senator Shelby over the years, he has done a great job in trying to steer jobs toward Alabama with FBI. And so there's going to be a lot of jobs that are going to be coming in there for the FBI. And so there's ways that we can make sure those jobs stay strong in the state of Alabama and especially up in North Alabama. And then, of course, Department of Commerce, as you say, commerce touches all areas. One of the areas of the Department of Commerce is the Economic Development Agency, EDA. And it is a organization within the Department of Commerce that tries to help cities and counties and municipal or government entities to try to get grants when they see a business that's going to be coming into their area to try to get a small grant. A lot of these smaller towns don't have the money to put up for to try to get a facility built, to a spec building for their small town or their county, and say, you know, if we had a spec building, then we could entice people to come in and land a business in our area. So that would be something also I'm very excited about, is trying to help work with EDA and trying to help rural America bring in some more manufacturing, which goes hand in hand to what we're talking about with the trade issue.
How long have you been on appropriations?
Well, I came as a freshman. So I've been here my entire time that I've been in Washington.
Well, that's okay. Then you're absolutely the one to ask. I'm so into the process about the things, and how do you go about, walk me through, if you want something, if you've identified a need that you can get or that you think you can get on appropriations, how do you, start to finish, go about your process of saying, okay, this is my thing, I'm going to chase it through committee? And how does that work?
Well, that process has changed over the years. As you well know, we are not do what is commonly known as earmarks. And if there is a project that needs a particular amount of funding, and usually this is for like state entities or like a city or a county that is going after some kind of particular project. I mean, one of the most classic things that I can think of is like I-22 is of course the interstate there and the western part of the state of Alabama that's really been helpful. That was part of that was funded through the appropriations through what is called earmarks, and it was when the money was being divided through the Appalachian Regional or Appalachian Highway Fund. It was selected as to get some dedicated money. And because of that, we've seen I-22 come into existence. When I was first elected, if you were in Birmingham, Alabama, and wanted to drive to Memphis, Tennessee, you were a large portion of the road was a two-lane road. None of it was controlled access until you hit the Mississippi line. And so through the funding that's through the Appalachian Highway funding, through appropriations, then that funding has occurred and it's open. And it's now we take for granted. You can get on the interstate and go right to Memphis, right on the outskirts of Memphis by interstate, which I think is going to open up all of northwest Alabama, especially to a lot of businesses. But just say there is a particular exit there in northwest Alabama. And obviously, you know, when you're driving down the interstates, you see these exits with, you know, they'll have Cracker Barrel, they'll have a Hampton Inn, and they'll have a Comfort Inn, and they'll have the McDonald's and all the others. And a lot of these places would be right for that in Northwest Alabama, but the problem is there's no infrastructure system for that exit. There's no sewer system. So, you know, you talk to a Cracker Barrel or a McDonald's or a Hampton Inn and try to put where there's not a sewer system or anything like a water system, then they're going to say, no, thank you. We just can't go into an area like that. So it being able to try to get funding through the appropriations process for, say, one of the counties in Northwest Alabama said, we're targeted this. We think this is a great exit that was really can grow, that people will stop here on their way between Birmingham and Memphis. We need some help, though, getting some infrastructure here. And when I was first selected, I worked on projects such as that. Now we're right now that we have put a hold on the earmarking process. So they have to, if they do it, they do sort of some kind of bidding process. But, you know, sometimes those are long, and there's those are always not as easy to get. So I'm hoping that perhaps there'll be a future that we can go back to a real fair earmarking system where...
I was going to ask, with the Democrats taking control, do you think it's coming now?
Well, they're looking very strongly at it, what I'm saying. But I think it's got to be done in a very fair way. You've got to make sure that this passes the smell test. And there's been examples in past Congresses years ago that there were some earmarks that were, you know, like really questionable, and I think that is that certainly is something that we cannot have. But if it's done in a fair way, it's done in a very transparent way, where it's not put in the middle of the night and all of a sudden people like, I didn't know that was in there. Make sure that it's in black and white in bold letters. Any kind of project that a member asked for, then I think that we should really look seriously going back to these congressionally directed projects, as we like to call them, as opposed to the administration, whatever the administration be. And I'm, you know, because administrations change, whether it's Democrat or Republican, you'll have somebody here in Washington that are slated to pick out which exits across the country need to get this, and they have no idea. They're sitting behind a desk and some office down the street on Pennsylvania or Constitution Avenue, and they really don't have a good feel, whereas members of Congress, I think, do have a good feel for where areas that would be helpful for economic growth.
I wanted to ask you about seniority. You've been in Congress 22 years. You've built seniority up. And, you know, this is an era of very short attention spans. And, you know, people run on term limits. It's you know, get your face on Fox News and everything. You've been able to build seniority over the years on appropriations and things like that. Why is that important? Why is it important in this day and age, flash in the pan stuff, to have that solid seniority?
Yeah. Well, Congress is not totally built. I mean, there are exceptions about with seniority, but generally speaking, seniority does carry some weight around here in different aspects. And I think that every year that I've been here, I have gained more information, more insight of how the process works. As you can imagine, with the federal government at the size it is, with all the different agencies and departments, you know, one person can't do a crash course in 2 years and know everything about it. I mean, like I said, I've been here 22 years, and I'm still learning about the system. And I've been on the Commerce Justice Science Subcommittee, as I mentioned, for several years, but as I'm taking more of a leadership role on that subcommittee, I'm learning even some more things that I didn't even know before, even though I've been on the subcommittee. So it's I think that's one thing that seniority does. It allows members who've been around longer and who have tried to stay with it, not trying to just jump over somebody at just, you know, to quickly just try to reach some kind of for political endeavors, then I think that's what really matters. And I think that serves their constituents well. And, you know, serving on the Appropriations Committee and trying to work my seniority is hopefully represent Alabama and the district I represent and try to be helpful to them in the process.
Does it concern you about the future of the appropriations process? Because y'all are on a roll. Y'all are passing title after title and are funded 75% of the government. Does it concern you about the future, or is this just the homeland?
Well, I agree with the president that this is a national security issue in the sense that the president, one of his number one tasks is to protect the nation, and so therefore he's making this a priority. And I think we have to at some point get a hold of what the immigration, what is happening on the border. I mean, it's a situation where we are seeing drugs. I know that a lot of drugs are brought in through the ports and through entry points, but there's also drugs that are over the border. They're smuggled in, and there's places that there's big gaps that if you know what you're doing, and a lot of these people, especially in Mexico and some of these Central American countries, they make it their business to figure out how to smuggle people, how to smuggle drugs into this country. And so I agree with the president. There has to be something that we get a hold of our border. So I think the president clearly has authority to do this. But it's not, and when I say he has authority to do it, this deals with a national emergency issue. Now, this doesn't mean that any president, he or any president, can just do anything they want to and say, oh, it's a national emergency. There are several, I think, ways that law is written that, and a barrier is one of the things that's written into law. So the president's not doing something that's completely just pulled out of left field. It is something that is actually already written in the law. So I think that's why he has the credibility to do it. And I would support him if he moves forward in that direction.
Okay. Well, anything else that I can that you'd like to tell folks back in Alabama?
Well, you know, it's starting. We're just now getting started in this new session of the 116th Congress, and we had the shutdown over the last few weeks. So it feels like really now we're just now getting underway. But it's, of course, a real honor for me to represent our area and represent Alabama. There's seven of us here on the House side that represents the state, as you know. And we all work very closely together. We understand that what's important for South Alabama can also help North Alabama and vice versa. And that we work as a delegation together. And I think that's one thing the Alabama delegation has always had a pride in working together and not, you know, saying, well, I don't really care about this part of Alabama, I only care about that part of Alabama. And we've really worked as a unit together, and I hopefully will continue to do so.
Thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you.